Welcome to the Good Shepherd and the Child podcast, where we explore the spirituality of the Christian child through the method of the catechesis of the Good Shepherd. I am your host, Carrie Mecchi-Lasanu. Father Dalmazio Mangilo was a Dominican priest who was very dear and close to Sophia Cavalletti and had a strong influence on our work, especially in regards to moral formation. He wrote many articles that you can read throughout our journals, including one from the 1999 journal called About Justice, a Meditation. Today, Ann Garrido joins me on the podcast to discuss this article, where he defines justice in the religious sense and how this applies to our work with children in the atrium. This article is available to you free online. You can check out our show notes to read it for yourself, or pull out that old 1999 journal or the compilation journal that has this article in it. I hope you enjoy. Ann Garrido, welcome back to the Good Shepherd and the Child podcast.
Carrie, it's so good to be back with you again.
It's always good to have you here. You're so full of wisdom. I love learning from you. So, Ann, you have been involved in this work since 1996, is that correct?
I have, yeah.
You are a formation leader in all three levels, as well as an associate professor at Aquinas Institute. Mm-hmm. You have so much credentials. And what's so perfect about that is because Aquinas is a Dominican university, is that correct?
We're a Dominican school of theology, yes.
Which is perfect, since we're going to be talking about Mangilo, and he is a Dominican as well. So that's, it just lines up nicely for us. And you have many books, including, you have a brand new book that's just hot on the press, right?
I do. Yes, I do. It's called Redeeming Power. And it, in some ways, it's kind of interesting because it's not disconnected from what we're going to talk about today. It has to do with what do we owe each other when there's a power differential between us. So yeah.
That's awesome. I love all of your books, so I can't wait to read this one as well. So today I'd love to dive in with you an article that Mangilo wrote, or actually, we believe that it was probably a talk he gave during the Concilio in 1996, 1997, I guess. And then it was turned into an article for the journal. Mm-hmm. And it's called About Justice, a Meditation. And so this is a really deep, beautiful, important, and hefty article that I'm looking forward to sitting at your feet and learning more about what Mangilo is teaching us through this article. It's from the 1999 journal.
Yeah, and it is. I think it's one of the meatiest pieces of his work that we have translated into English. And as you said, it's maybe one of the most complicated ones that we have, in part because of the nature by which it came about, like you're illuminating, like that it probably is taken from somebody's notes who were part of this conversation, and then we're translating them into English for us. But then also because justice itself is just a really complicated topic. So yeah. There's, as you noted, this is probably one of the harder things that he's written for us to be able to get insight into. And I'm learning about it. I've had to read it several times myself just to see, yeah, what do I think he's trying to say here? So yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing what comes forward between the two of us in the conversation with each other.
Yeah, I know. I had to read it multiple times. And just like when I read Sophia for the first time, I had to read it out loud in order for me to be able to really consume it.
I got it.
And my oldest daughter was listening to me and she was like, "Do you even understand what you're saying?" Like, I'm trying.
But in the end, that's the best kind of literature, isn't it? The ones that we have to really sit with and ponder.
Yeah. There's a lot in this article that's really beautiful and challenging, but challenging in a growth way. So I appreciate it. But yes, it is definitely one that you need to be ready to use your brain to read and grow when you're reading. So in this article, at the very beginning, he starts by talking about relationship. And I think that there's a lot deeper significance in why he is doing that. Do you want to lift up why he would start out this article about justice, about talking about relationship?
Yeah, it does seem strange because on one hand, the whole article is entitled that it's, you know, this idea is going to be a meditation about justice. And then for the first page, it doesn't say anything at all, really, about justice per se. But I think what maybe is important to understand before we get deeper into the article is that Father Mangiello really was a scholar of St. Thomas Aquinas. He taught at the Angelicum in Rome in moral theology and was really an expert in Thomas's writing on the Summa. And particularly what he's talking about here has a deep, deep foundation in the thought of Thomas Aquinas. So when Thomas talks about justice, Thomas also starts by talking about relationship. Because in modern day kind of American consciousness, like the way we think about what does it mean to be human, we have a very strong concept of the I, like the sense of like me, my rights, my freedoms, what I deserve. But Thomas and Mangiello would both emphasize, you can't really understand what it means to be a human person unless you understand that a human person is never an island unto themselves. They always belong to, well, I will say a whole. And Mangiello right. begins by describing the whole in which to which human beings belong, which means like, I belong to a family, I belong to a society, I belong to the human race. And then beyond that, I belong to the world, I belong to the cosmos. Like, and that what that means is that if I really see myself as part of a whole, it means that there is no action I can take all day long that in some way, shape, or form doesn't impact something, someone beyond just me.
Right.
And so that to live well as a human person in this world means that I always have to be aware of my interdependence with all the rest of creation and all my other brothers and sisters that are sharing the earth with me at the same time. And even those of different times and different places.
Right, right. He says this is a reawakening to interdependency.
Yes. And that before we can talk about justice, in order to understand justice well, we need to first lay the groundwork. We are entirely interdependent creatures.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was imagining when he was talking about this interdependence between us and all of creation, other humans, animals, trees, the cosmos, like you were just saying, but then also this interdependence, this relationship between us and God. So we have that horizontal relationship with that vertical relationship that we really lift up in level three. Right. That's the image that was in my head is during this whole first page, because he's talking about laying the foundation of those relationships before we can even talk about justice.
Yeah. And you can see why he's naming that, because it is in contrast to the way that maybe in modern society we think about ourselves. So if you go into talking about justice, but you don't have a sense that the human that there is a God, right? Or if you go into talking about justice, but you don't have a sense of being in relationship with other people, then you'll begin, and sometimes you'll hear that, right? You can't tell me how to vote, or you can't tell me whether I can drive or not, you know, or like, it's like my particular body. But for us, as from Catholic Christian lens, it's always about you're part of a much larger body than yourself. Mm-hmm. And you also have to, you're trying to figure out what's the right relationship between your body and the body of the whole, if you want to say.
Right, right. It's almost like a zoom out. Like you have to look at the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm. Because everything for Father Mangiello will have to do, and with St. Thomas, will have to do about starting to seek the right relationship between the whole and the individual or the part.
Right, right. Okay, so Mangiello keeps talking about this phrase in Latin, and let's see if I can not butcher this phrase. It's like, I want to read it like it's English, and that's not.
I think it would be pronounced uniquique suum.
What does it mean, and how does it have to do with justice?
So this is how St. Thomas basically defines justice, as a short way of saying how St. Thomas defines justice, but actually it's older than Thomas. It actually goes back to Greek philosophy, especially Aristotle. So literally, if you were to translate it literally, it means to each his own.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something that, you know, you or I might say on a daily basis. Like sometimes somebody does something a little weird in front of us and we'll be like, well, you know, to each his own. Kind of like whatever floats your boat.
Right.
But in some ways, that is the opposite of what Father Mangiello or Thomas Aquinas would mean by that term.
Right.
What it originally meant was making sure that each person gets what he or she is due or what they are owed. So Thomas's fuller definition of justice is Justice is the perpetual and constant will to render each his due. Now that in itself, you might say that's a little confusing, right?
Right.
To the perpetual and constant will. It means that all the time I'm desiring for you that you get what you are owed, that what's due to you. So justice as a virtue, again, this is so not the way we think about it in contemporary America. Like, we're always like, well, what am I owed? I want to make sure I'm being treated fairly. But that's not what actually the virtue of justice is really about. Justice is about making sure that everybody around me, and that my will, like what I want for the whole earth, is that everybody would have what they are due, that everybody is able to receive what they are owed. And then the big question, of course, is, well, what are we due, right? Like, what is it that we are owed? But that's the next question. The key phrase for him is that uniquique suum means that I have a desire inside of me that wants to make sure that you receive what you are owed, that you get what you're due. So that, let's just say, for example, if I borrowed money from you, that you're owed that money back. And I want to make sure that you get that back. That'd be an example of it. Though there are many other things. That's a financial example, but there are many other things we could talk about, like what are we owed.
He also talks about how uniquique suum, he says that it always belongs to everyone, but it's never the same. Or that it can be, there's a constant and it changes. Like, what is that?
Yeah. Well, what Mangiello lifts up is that the world's always evolving, right? It's always changing from time to time, from era to era to era. So that what's normative is always changing. What we hope for and what we might expect as human beings, it's always on the move. So it's not something that's ever going to once and for all be realized.
Right.
Even I don't know, for myself, sometimes I, for the last 20 years, I'll keep saying, when I'm in my job, I'm like, okay, as soon as I get my act together, I'm going to do this. and then finally you realize, like, oh, I'm never totally going to have my act together, in part because my act itself keeps changing. What I consider to be like what I'm trying to get together itself continues to be on the move, if you want to say.
Right.
So different people of different times, different people in different places of the world, all have slightly different expectations or hopes. And that it's not like there's any one fixed definition in the sense of what justice would look like, and it's, or that it would be realized. So for example, if I were a doctor and I went out into the doctor's waiting room and I said, okay, I'm going to be really, really fair here. I'm going to give everybody an aspirin and then you go home. Right. So I can't, that's not really, that might be equal, but everybody in that room has a different need. Everybody in that room has a different expectation of what they've come there for today.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the thing that makes justice particularly complex is that every different person has, in every different culture and every different time, has slightly different needs, has slightly different expectations, has different hopes. And so it's, justice is not something that we ever possess. I can't ever be like, oh, I've got justice. I'm a just person. It's more something that we're always shooting for. It's an orientation. So that, again, to go back to Thomas's definition, and he says it's a perpetual and constant will. It means like it's a desire that I've always got in front of me to make sure that that everybody's getting their due. But it doesn't mean that it's something that I'm going to be able to realize and have fixed in place in my own lifetime.
Which makes sense whenever you think about it in regards to how connected we all are. It's more of the we working towards like me as an individual working towards mm-hmm. justice, towards a more just world, but it's also the we that's working towards that.
Community.
Yeah. So for me to say like, oh, now I'm just, that completely is opposed to what we were talking about at the beginning of this interconnectedness.
Right.
Okay. So Mangiello really dives into that there's these three things that we have to be aware of if we're seeking this uniqua suum. Can you speak into what those three things are and kind of explain to us why those are important?
Yes. So here's where I might say the article gets particularly complicated, as if it wasn't before, right? But he says that there are three things that are kind of like, we won't be able to really understand the complication of justice until we get that. One, here's his three things. There's a plurality of human individuals and cultures. Two, that there are a variety of needs and distribution of tasks. And three, the role that law can play in this. So before I talk to those three particular things, I think there's one piece of maybe foundation that could be helpful for us to have in the back of our minds. Again, because Mangiello is a scholar of Thomas, it could be helpful to know that Thomas talks about three different kinds of justice in the Summa. And this seems to be like the backdrop of what Mangiello is referring to here. One is what we could call like general or legal justice, which is like questions we might have about what do we as individuals owe the whole of society? Like we as parts of the whole, what do we owe the whole? The second one is what is called distributive justice. And he uses that language a lot here of distribution. Distributive justice is what the whole owes its parts.
So the opposite.
It's the opposite. Like what does society owe individuals? And then the third one is what's called commutative justice, which is what individuals owe other individuals. So kind of to go back to that example, like if I borrow money from you, this is what I owe you back in return. Like that's just between the two of us, kind of like I'm making up a contract with my plumber or whatever. Mm-hmm. In the article, sometimes I think that language of commutative justice also gets sometimes translated as like communication or communicative. But it's at the same kind of root, right? That it's about human beings trying to build bridges between one another. So we could say that if you were in a society where everybody's individual relationships were totally just all the time, like if every time people got into a situation with one another, they both totally desired the other be treated fairly.
Wouldn't that be nice?
There might not really be a lot of need for society as a whole to try to redistribute things, right? Or to try to distribute justice. The part of the reason why we need distributive justice is because there is unfairness in the world or there's injustice in the world, right? So sometimes there needs to be the effort to try to refigure out, like, what do we as a whole need to try to do for members who maybe especially have not received the justice that they were due at the commutative level? So this is what makes all these different forms of justice so difficult to render. And this is where his three parts come in, is that one, there is this incredible diversity among people, diversity of cultures and languages, and then diversity among the individual people in those cultures. As we talked about earlier, not everybody's got the same aspirations or the same expectations or the same norms. So in some cultures, you know, some cultures really think that you're due healthcare. And then other cultures might say, that's not what we think of as that. We don't have that as an expectation.
Right.
In democratic cultures, we have a very strong sense that I'm due the right to vote. Mm-hmm. Other cultures might be that aren't oriented in the same way, or that I have a right to education, or I have the right to the access of the internet, like mm-hmm. right to public goods. So there's a lot of variation across the globe. And so that's one of the things that makes it hard to figure out what everybody is really due. Also, people are in different situations at different points in their life. You know, like the doctor's office example that I gave earlier. Right. People have different needs. That's one of the things that makes justice tough. But then he says also one of the things that makes justice tough is that when you begin to wake up to this and you're like, oh my gosh, so then how can I meet everybody's, how can I try to be just to everybody on the right place of the planet? And he says, well, you should also take consolation in the fact that we belong to a whole also means that the whole task of justice doesn't belong to you. You're not the, like it is something that we shoot for individually to try to treat people justly. But it also means that you're not responsible for fixing all the injustice in the world. It's kind of interesting to me to think about, even when I think about Matthew chapter 25, when Jesus talks about, you know, that grand scene of judgment that happens in the gospel, where the sheep and the goats get separated from one another. Mm-hmm. It's interesting in the gospel, it's not individuals that Jesus is judging, but nations. In that particular parable, it's like within a whole nation, these are the kinds of acts that we need to be doing toward one another. But it doesn't mean that you're responsible for personally making sure that everybody is clothed or that everybody has food or that every person who's dead is buried. You know, like those are things that are beyond what one person is going to be able to do. But these are things that societies as a whole and each of us, we just have to play our role in the larger society, our part of the whole.
Hmm.
And that one of the things then, that the closing part, which she talks about with law, is that the purpose of law in any society is not to leave justice to chance. Like it means it's not just left to individuals to try to figure out what this looks like. But that law in any society helps to manage as effectively as possible the relationship between the whole and the parts. And between the parts to make, and because as he emphasizes in the article, this is what keeps society peaceful rather than breaking out into war all of the time. Living in a culture that has a rule of law institutionalizes justice in some ways. It helps to create stability in the whole of a society. None of us really wants to live in a place that's without rule of law. Mm-hmm. I know it. Some experience I had earlier in my life, I actually lived in a situation where the rule of law was not alive and well. It is not a place that you want to live, right? So rule of law is what law really helps give us guidance on what right relationship looks like. And it helps to enforce it within society so that people don't have to try to take justice into their own hands all of the time.
Right. I love the way he talks about law equals order. Having that law is what creates order. And I love the way he talks about even organisms. He says, when there is no law, relationships are disorderly. There is no order but disorder. When an organism is no longer regulated, it falls apart and dies.
There is one work in level 3, and I know in a minute we want to talk about like how does this apply in Atrium Life? But there's one work in level 3. If you think about the Exodus study, there's this one card in the Exodus tracing packet of the tents that are all around the tent of meeting. And then it's like all the different, like when the trumpets blew, this is the way that the different tribes all organized themselves mm-hmm. in order to get ready to move. And I've always wondered, like, why is that card? Like, why is that in there? Like, why is that part of the story at all in the bigger story of Exodus, which is this, you know, grand, magnificent tale? Where did that even come from? Because it seems so peripheral. But I thought it was interesting in the article that he mentions Moses and the organization of the people of Israel that happened. And I thought, oh, this is where that card came from. Mm-hmm. This is why it is, where it talks about how, like, when the Jewish people increased in number, Moses was advised to divide them into groups of thousands, hundreds, fifties, tens, assigning a leader to each group. And then I was like, oh, this is where that card comes from.
Mm-hmm.
The purpose that's underneath that is lifting up how this people was trying to live in an orderly fashion.
Right.
Gift of the law.
Right. And the gift towards justice that is created when you have order, when you have law. It's fascinating. I mean, we could have a whole side conversation just about the connection then between the human tendency of order, the human need of order, and its connection here towards order helps create justice. Mm-hmm. That's a whole side conversation. Maybe we need to pause and think about that in our own personal life. But I just find it really fascinating that I think that there is a connection there between the order that we say that we all desire, that children desire order, that we all have a human tendency towards order, and that Mangiello is lifting up, that it has this ability to create, to lead us towards justice. That's fascinating. Okay, so how does this apply in our work with children in the atrium? Why is this important for us in our work?
Yes. And at the end of the article, you can tell that it was part of this larger conversation that was happening where some of the catechists who were there, they were trying to wrestle with that themselves.
Yeah.
There's a lovely section at the end, which is kind of a Q&A. And one of the questions is exactly that, like, where does this fit into Atrium Life? And Mangiello keeps emphasizing there that it is absolutely, like, this work of justice is absolutely central to the life of the atrium because it's central to the life of a Christian, right?
Right.
He keeps saying that Christianity is not just about a vertical bridge. It's not just about a relationship between me and God. It's about also the relationship that we have with each other. And when I was reflecting on this more in light of, like, reading the article, I thought, if you look at the way that atrium unfolds over the course from, like, when you begin working with 3-year-olds or whatever to in level one up to when they're commencing at level three, level one really is about the realization of the individual, that what's happening for that youngest child is that they are differentiating themselves. The earliest boundary the child's differentiating themselves from is their mother, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're learning that there's a boundary between, I am a separate person unto myself. I am an individual. I'm not just a collective. And that everything about level one is kind of like helping the child grow into themselves, right? To know who they are, that I can make choices for myself. I can choose what work I could do. I can exercise my own desires within the basic limits of safety for the community or the whole, right?
Right.
But largely the work in level one is about the development of the individual. And then it also struck me that in level one, what we're really doing is we're laying seeds of the kingdom of God. Now in level one, we're just lifting up. It is the kingdom of God is this precious, precious mystery to be treasured above all other mysteries. And that it's that somehow like the mystery of the mustard seed, in which, at the end of that parable, in which all things will find a home, right? That it exists for itself, but all things will find a home. Now, that's not a key point for the level one child, but the fact that we're giving them the parable, like we're laying the seeds of the kingdom of God, not necessarily emphasizing its communal aspect yet, because we're not ready for that yet. But then they're ready when you get to level two and then into level three. As a child enters into the second plane and they themselves begin to become more communal, the world's beginning to expand in front of them. They're aware of other people, that the world goes even beyond my family. How far does his voice reach? And I have friends for the first time. And so then all these questions about what does right relationship really begin to emerge. As we've said before in a lot of catechesis training, you know, you'll see tattletaling, which really is this desire. It's the desire in the child for justice, isn't it? They're trying to figure out, the level two child has an undying desire for justice, don't they? They're trying to figure out the rules by which, how does a community function? How do I relate to the other people who are here? What does one-on-one right relationship look like? But then larger than that too. And you think about the parables of the kingdom of God that we begin to give them in level two and unto level three, that begin to focus more and more on what does right relationship between God and humans look like? You know, think like insistent friend or Pharisee and the publican. But then also, what does right relationship between humans look like? Which also is part of the insistent friend, or also part of the Pharisee and the publican, or also part of, you know, Good Samaritan or beyond. And then in level three is when you begin to get, you know, some of the most complicated parables that we've got that really zero in on some questions around justice, like the parable of the talents or the parable of the workers in the vineyard. Francesca mentions both of these in the article with Father Mangiello. You know, are our concepts of justice the same as what God's concepts of justice are, like the kind of our floating conversations of justice in society, are they actually biblical concepts of justice? That's what Jesus, I think, was pointing out in each of those, is that sometimes what you think is justice isn't necessarily, if you really think about it, if we really dig into this, what justice looks like. And then finally, in level three, we actually get the work on the virtues, which is the one and only work in the atrium really that has roots in Thomistic theology. And I suspect has some direct lines to Father Mangiello.
Yeah.
But that's the one where it names justice as a cardinal virtue. And then it looks at the different kind of daughter virtues that are beneath justice that help us to live justice.
I feel like after you have lifted up those three different forms of justice that Thomas Aquinas talked about, that Mangiello was talking about, I see that in how you just broke up the three different levels and like starting with the relationship and the interdependence that you see in a level one child. And, but then I also see the parts to a whole and whole to a parts.
Yes.
In all of what you, all the different materials that you just lifted up, you can start to see those three different forms of justice so much. Now that it's been pointed out to me, I feel like now I can see it. That's really neat.
That we're creating an environment. We're creating an environment in which the virtue of justice can, we're forming capacities to exercise the virtue of justice.
Yeah.
Yeah. It struck me in some ways that one of the favorite parables of the level three child, that parable of the workers in the vineyard, boy, if you're going to get a hot conversation started,
yeah,
in the 20 fields, it really is a parable about distributive justice, because it strikes us as so unfair that at the end of the day, those that only worked 1 hour got the same wage as those who worked the entire day. But then when you go deeper and deeper into it, it's saying, well, why sometimes are there larger issues in that society in which those people maybe really wanted to work but didn't have access? Like they didn't get picked up until the end of the day. Maybe they've been sitting all day long in the marketplace waiting for someone to be able to offer them a job. And their needs are still the same. Their family still needs to eat just as much as any other family. So what the owner of the vineyard really is doing there is distributive justice. Mm-hmm. Like the master is giving all of them what they actually need for their families for that day, though it strikes us as radically unfair because they didn't all work the same number of hours.
Because we've always looked at it through the eyes of our cultural terms of justice, the I, like what you were talking about before. And so what this does, what Mongillo and Thomas Aquinas are lifting up to us, is a different way of looking at justice, so that then we can look at this parable through the eyes of justice that's closer to what God defines as justice.
Yeah. And it might be kind of radically different than what we're used to.
Yeah. And yeah. Praise God for that.
Challenging. That's the last way the article is challenging, is that when I think about that, I'm like, oh, this justice thing is, it's not just hard to read about. It's not just hard to comprehend. It's, I can see why it's really hard to do.
Yeah.
And it's uncomfortable, and I have to sit and ponder it more and figure out, what does justice look like in my life?
Yeah. He has such great quotes in this article that really point out, like he says, justice is not an accessory of the faith. Rather, it is the incarnation of faith. Faith without justice is un-Christian. It's, he's pointing out how important it is that if we are going to call ourselves Christian, then we can't ignore this. Then we have to understand justice. And again, not the justice like what our culture defines justice, but like what Thomas Aquinas has been lifting up, the different types of justice, like what you were saying, God's form of justice. Because faith without justice is un-Christian. Like that's mic drop. That's pretty big.
Yeah. And it's so perfect why we're doing this podcast for Lent.
Yeah.
Right? Because Lent is that time of year where it's always about, it's, Lent also realizes that the Christian life is never realized, right? Like, it's not like, oh, I've got this Christianity thing all wrapped up. It's always a journey. We're always shooting to become more like Christ, which means we're always pursuing a life of virtue. And there's always something in us ready to be, being called to conversion, being called to transformation. Metanoia, turn around again and again and again. So Lent calls us in a perfect time of year to come back to a meditation on justice.
Yeah. So much in this article. Thank you, Anne. Thank you really for helping to just break it open and help us understand this article a lot better, and the beauty that is what Mongillo is trying to give us, especially for the children in this time of Lent. I appreciate you breaking it up into more layman's terms for us.
Oh, Carrie, thank you for inviting me to go more deeply into it. It's one of those things that I've read and I've used in formation courses, but I don't think I've sat and pondered it enough myself. So this has been good for me to dig more deeply as well and try to figure out what he was saying.
Well, before we finish, I would love to hear a little bit about your new book that you just had come out.
Well, a lot of my day work outside of Catechesis of the Good Shepherd has been doing helping people with difficult conversations and mediating challenging conversations. And what I've noticed is that in recent years, more and more of the difficult conversations people are having oftentimes have to do with questions around power.
Mm.
And a lot of these actually have, they're questions around justice, which is sort of like, what do I oh, other people, right? Like, if, and what does a spirituality of power look like? Which in many ways is asking questions around what does a spirituality of justice look like if one is in leadership? So my new book is just like Manjilo in some ways grounds this whole article in an image from Genesis of that God created the world to be a just place. And that I, from the very creation stories, we've got that. I also try to ground this book on redeeming power in the creation stories of Genesis and look at the interpretation of those creation stories in terms of what does justice in 12 different actions that leaders take look like.
Hmm.
I don't got answers for this. But I loved doing the research on it because I interviewed a whole bunch of people who were in positions of leadership or positions of power who cared a lot about justice and to just see how they were wrestling with these questions.
That's fascinating.
And it sounds highfalutin when I say it that way, but really it's written for all of us who are in everyday church leadership. Those of us who are in roles of teaching or, you know, pastors or anybody who's in a position where they realize that they are a leader in any way, shape, or form. It's not a highfalutin theology book. It's written for all of us.
Thank you for that. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll put a link in our show notes for how people can purchase this new book.
Oh, thank you. I would appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Anne. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks, Carrie, for inviting me. It's so good to be with you again.
It's always good to be with you too, Anne. Thank you all for listening to this week's episode of the Good Shepherd and the Child podcast. In our show notes, you will find a few different things. You can access the journal that Anne and I discussed about justice, a meditation from the 1999 journal. You can access it to be able to read it for free online. Or if you would like to purchase the compilation journal that has this article in it, I have a link in our show notes for that as well. You might also be interested in Anne's book, A Year with Sophia Cavaletti, and a section of that book is on Father Manjilo. I also have in our show notes how to access Anne's brand new book, Redeeming Power. Don't forget that you can submit a podcast listener question if you have any questions for us about the Catechesis of the Good Shepherd. We would love to answer them. And we also have the third edition of The Religious Potential of the Child by Sophia Cavaletti and read by Rebecca Roitsevich available on Audible. If you want more information about that, check out our show notes. This podcast is sponsored by the United States Association of the Catechesis of the Good Shepherd. We would like to thank all of our members because you are making this podcast possible. If you would like to know more about the Catechesis of the Good Shepherd or to become a member, please go to cgsusa.org. Thank you all for listening. We will see you in 2 weeks. Go and fall more deeply in love with God.